Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. So lovely to be able to bring you this podcast, which is our recording from our meetup the other night. So fantastic to see a bunch of people in that wonderful space of Club Soda in London. Connection is just everything, honestly. It really is. And it's lovely to see a few people who I'd not connected with before. I don't think they're Sober Club members. I guess they're podcast listeners, but they just rocked up to that event. And it's very brave when people do that. I remember the very first time I went along to a sober meetup. I was so nervous. I kind of walked around the car park for 20 minutes first, trying to get brave enough. But if you're in that situation, do come along to events, because it really changes everything, that human connection, when you realise there are like-minded people that you can actually talk to, and we're very friendly. So really looking forward to sharing that with you. Just a quick mention that while we're on connection, that we do have a couple of events next weekend. If you can get to Hertfordshire, it doesn't matter if it's last minute, we still have some space. So Saturday the 20th of April, it's our vision board day. It's an empowering day where we look at what you want for the future. So it doesn't matter what stage you're at in terms of sobriety. You can do a vision board for your business, for your health and well-being, for the holidays you want, for any aspect of your life, really. But we'll be doing all of that stuff. And usually those kind of days are really, really empowering, and people leave feeling like they've got a plan and feeling really optimistic about the future. So that's next Saturday in Hertfordshire, our empowering vision board workshop day. And then on Sunday the 21st, it's family constellations. And again, if you've not heard me talk about it before, tricky to describe, but really amazingly life-changing. So check out all the info about these events. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, then you can read all the info there. And then looking ahead to May, we've got self-care in sobriety retreat at Champneys in Tring. So again, doesn't matter what stage you're at, or all of these events are, you know, there's no prerequisites, as it were. So it'd be fantastic to see you. I really hope we get a few more people to the things we have next weekend, because it'd just be lovely to meet more podcast listeners. So come along if you can. You can always drop me a message, you know, if you want more information about any of these. If you don't already, please follow me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. I'm very, very easy to find. Just before we get into the interview, I just wanted to share as well that you probably saw that piece in the press this week. Honestly, it was another one of those pieces of alleged journalism that I just couldn't believe. It was all about the theory was that couples who drink alcohol together stay together longer. I mean, seriously, it's like, how can they even begin to create an article around that? Just unbelievable. Literally, the opposite is true. Or let's put it another way. Perhaps if they stay together, they stay together despite the alcohol, but absolutely not because of it. I found that so unbelievably shocking. Fortunately, the comments for the piece I saw were equally as damning, you know, basically people saying, no, hold on a minute, it was alcohol that destroyed my relationship, or I quit and my partner didn't quit, or my partner quit and I was still drinking. Absolute disaster. If you're drinking together, it just simply means that both of you are self-harming, not that your relationship is going to be stronger, right? And it's those kinds of articles that just keep people stuck year in, year out, you know, while you're drinking, while it's easier just to be, you know, kept small, don't step out your comfort zone. And you see articles like that. Well, I did. I'll speak for myself. I would see articles like that and think, oh, there's another great reason to continue drinking. And while I'm at it, I'll persuade my husband to drink a bit more so they can keep up with me. But trust me, the opposite is true. The brave person, you know, the absolute badass, is the one who quits with this and goes against the curve, right? Because the emperor is not, in fact, wearing any clothes. And that leads us very nicely into our session from earlier in the week. If you were there, thank you so much. You will get to hear yourself laughing out loud in the background. A huge thank you to Michael for being such an amazing guest. And we will do another one of these podcast meetups at some point, so feel free to register your interest if you'd like to come along. It's such a fantastic way of just connection and meeting up in a really lovely environment. And as I say, check out the events next weekend. If you're not yet a Sober Club member, just a little plug, you know, it is a fantastic community. It's very low cost. There is so much value within our community. I'm very fortunate. I've got a lot of amazing experts who've contributed their time. So you really can dig deep into pretty much all aspects of health and well-being. It's about so much more than not drinking. I found myself saying that quite a lot this week, because I've had a couple of conversations with people around coaching. As you know, I train people to be holistic sober coaches. We've got another course coming up soon. And one of the things that, you know, I have to kind of make super, super clear is that the training courses that I offer and the work that I do with coaching is not just, in inverted commas, about encouraging people to stop drinking, you know, taking them through a short challenge or whatever and convincing them that alcohol is not a good idea. Of course we do that. That underpins it all. But it's so much more than that. And that's when the magic happens, when you grasp that, hold on a minute, that's just step one. That's just laying the foundations. That has to come under everything. But it's about creating that life that you don't have to escape from, that you don't want to escape from. And that becomes possible when you stop drinking. When you stop drinking, it becomes possible to start to layer on other things, to become open to other possibilities of being healthy, of eating well, of finding your purpose, of doing something creative, of just being literally a nicer person, kinder person. I swear to God, sober people are so much more kind. I think it's just about the compassion, really. Maybe it's just that we feel so much compassion because we know what we've had to go through, right? So you tend to find that when you make friends within this community, people are very, very supportive. And that's how it is within the Sober Club. There is such a supportive community. We become cheerleaders for each other. So it really doesn't matter if you're day one, or you're thinking about stopping drinking, or if you've been stopped for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, it doesn't matter. There's always something else, isn't there? There's always another layer that we want to look at, another aspect of well-being. And that's really what we focus on. It's the everything else. So anyways, check it out if you haven't already. It's thesoberclub.com. And now, enjoy.
So, welcome everybody to the Alcohol Free Life podcast at Club Soda.
Yay!
Participation. It's just fantastic to be in this space. Anybody here for the first time? A few of you?
Yeah.
Amazing. So, yeah, you're probably counting all the incredible drinks that you're going to be able to sample. It really is a game changer, isn't it, to be somewhere like this. It's just great. So I'm absolutely delighted that my guest is Michael Sargood. He is happy without the hooch.
I am most of the time. Yeah. I am definitely happier than I used
happier
to be. Grumpy with the grog, really.
Yes, yes. Grumpy with the grog. Now, I'm going to share, Michael, how we first met.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll get into some stuff about your life and all the stuff that you do. So I think I saw something of you were doing bits and pieces on social media, I think, or you contacted me.
I did.
And we met for a coffee.
Yep.
And we were having a little chat about the fact that you'd stopped drinking and you were putting some social events on. You really wanted to put some social
yes.
bits and bobs on. So we'll talk more about that in a moment. But the bit I wanted to share is that I said to you, well, maybe at some point you could come and come on the podcast and talk about some of the social events. And you said, how do I find podcasts?
that is true.
It's like, what's a podcast?
I knew that podcasts existed.
Look at you now. I mean, I know you know, that overtaken me in Instagram numbers and all of that.
No.
But, you know, don't worry about that.
But, yeah, I knew that podcasts existed.
Oh, you did.
And I knew that somehow people got music without buying CDs.
Yeah.
I'd never worked out how to do it. And so once I worked out how to find a podcast, I found there was and music there as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, I've got at least 3 songs on my phone now. I'm a pro.
Exactly. So tell us a bit about those days then. Well, in fact, before we do that, tell us a bit about your background then. And you've already given us an indication that there are perhaps some memories that you'd rather forget. So we don't necessarily have to dig deep into all of them, but give us a little bit of a potted history.
Well, luckily, most of the memories I'd like to forget, I don't actually have memories of. I've heard them sort of secondhand.
Yeah.
I didn't really drink at all in my teens, until my late teens. I was mischievous, but like my family didn't really drink. My dad, I'd never seen him drunk. He might have like a bitter shandy with a Plowman's if he's going for a walk, that sort of thing. But he doesn't like alcohol, and so it was never really ingrained in me. And then when I was 17, I remember nicking a bottle of wine from the shed on New Year's Eve to take to my friend's New Year's Eve party. I say party, I think there's about 4 of us there, and at the vicar's house. and they didn't want to share it, so I just drank the whole lot and vomited. And I thought, that's good, let's do that again. I found that I really liked it. I seemed to like it more than other people. And then I got a bar job when I was, I was working in the kitchen when I was 17. When I was 18, allowed to work behind the bar. I'd work behind the bar and people would buy you a pint. So at the end of your shift, you'd have about 3 or 4 pints to drink. And I remember one day I wasn't working and I'd already spent all my money on booze, because if I wasn't working behind the bar, I was spending my money behind the same bar. I lived in a little village. And I thought, it was a Saturday night, so I can't stay in tonight and watch Noel's house party with my parents. I've had it with Blobby. And I was really itching for a drink, but I had already spent my money. I had no money. And I was frantic. I was like lifting up the cushions on the sofa, just looking for coins to see if I could scrape enough together for a pint. And I found a few, but not enough. And then I lived opposite a shop, so I thought, well, maybe somebody's dropped some change near the shop. And I was walking up and down the street, just looking for pennies. And I did think at the time, this isn't really normal, is it? I'm so desperate for a pint. But I scraped enough together, I had my pint. But yeah, looking back, that probably was an indication fairly on in my sort of drinking career that I liked it a little bit too much.
So when did it really ramp up for you then?
Well, I was a binge drinker, which is a great British tradition, so it wasn't a problem. for like many years, I just binge drank the weekends, mainly Fridays and Saturdays. And every time I did drink, I would very rarely have memories of going to bed or going home. Then when I was about 28, I lost my best friend unexpectedly. And I was in a really nasty relationship. And I'd made a plan with my best friend that I was going to move in with her. And then she went to hospital one Wednesday, like a couple of weeks before I was meant to move in. And she had died by the Saturday. And I was like, she was the sort of she was who I would turn to talk about it. And she knew all the problems I was having at home. And so I'd lost my best friend, my confidant, and the person who was going to be my escape plan from this horrible relationship. And I then started buying like just the little half bottles of gin on the way back from work, just pop into the little Sainsbury's local.
Oh yeah, the half bottle that we just have 3 of.
Well, at first I was able to like, half would do the trick. I got out of that relationship eventually. It was about another 2 or 3 years I was in it. And I got into a new relationship and everything was great, but I just couldn't leave the alcohol behind. And also I'd been introduced to this idea of Thursday being the new Friday. So now, because no one really expects you to work very hard on a Friday, so it doesn't matter if you're hungover. So I was now drinking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then, I don't know why, I was in an amateur orchestra and we'd have rehearsals on a Wednesday evening. And on the way back, I got into this habit of stopping at the shop and grabbing a packet of crisps and a bottle of something. And so now I was drinking Wednesday till Sunday. And at that point, I found that on Mondays and Tuesdays, I was very sweaty and shaky. So then started buying drinks just to feel human again. And I'd turn up to work absolutely covered in sweat. And now I didn't even want to drink, but it's like, if I don't drink, I'm not going to be able to function. And so it just gradually crept from weekend binge drinking to comfort drinking to then actually full-blown dependency. I got myself in some scrapes with the law. I lost my driving licence. I caught the morning after drinking on a camping trip in Wales. That was quite eventful. And instead of thinking, OK, it's time to reevaluate, I was like, oh, I don't have to drive anyone anywhere now. If I had made commitments to drive, because my partner didn't drive, and if I had to be anywhere, obviously I couldn't drink until I'd finished driving. Mm. But now, well, I've got lifts from people. I was drinking every day, and it ramped up to a full bottle of vodka a night for most of it. Sometimes I'd only have a half on the Monday. But the period where it really ramped up from, I'd been daily drinking, but to up to a bottle, it's like, well, I've lost my driving licence, I've lost my job, I've got the same income, no time on my hands, and I was just drinking myself to oblivion until I was in the psychiatric unit. And then I thought, actually, you know what, this might be a bit of a problem.
were people worried about you then? Did you have kind of any kind of support network of people who were kind of calling it out a bit?
Well, my partner at the time was worried, but more pissed off, I think. Mm. Bit of both, I mean, because it's not easy being with someone who is drinking to that extent, and it was hugely embarrassing for him because he works at the hospital. And I kept on going to the hospital either because like a mental health concern or because I'd injured myself, because I was constantly injuring myself at the end of nights out as well. And so he'd be on shift doing a night shift, and one of the nurses would come up and say, oh, your partner's just been admitted again. And it was just really embarrassing, I think, for him. Yeah. But also, there was concern, but it's just it became so predictable, dull and boring. It's like concern on the first few instances, but after a while, you become used to it, and it's more of an annoyance. And, I mean, he did give me an ultimatum that, you know, it's either me or the drink, and I chose the drink. I'm not proud to say that. But that is what I did. I tried to keep both, but you just can't stay with someone who's behaving that way and so self-destructive. Mm. There's just no way to live, and I know, because after I stopped drinking, I've got my new partner that I've kept on drinking for a year and a half to the similar levels that I was.
Right.
And it's like, okay, I've got my comeuppance now. You know, screaming at 2 a.m. whilst I've got to get up at 6 for work, and yeah, I've seen both sides of it, and if you are in that situation, if your partner isn't going to change, I don't have any sort of grudge that my partner left, because sometimes you just need to protect yourself.
Mm, absolutely. It is a really difficult one. I'm super grateful I'm not in that dating scene, but I can imagine it's really hard to set those boundaries, because it literally underpins absolutely everything. It's not just a case of, you know, whether you like the same movies. It underpins everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, the difficult thing I found is with my current partner, when I stopped drinking, it's just like, well, drinking was how we bonded.
Yeah.
We'd met in the pub, and we were both the drunkest people there. I mean, what a good thing to base a relationship on.
Yeah.
I remember one evening we went round just trying to find a pub to go into, and we ended up giving up because either I or he was barred from the pub. And so between us, we ended up just going to the off licence and going back home because we couldn't find a pub that we weren't like mutually not barred from.
Yeah.
And then when I stopped drinking, every now and then he'd have an attempt, but as soon as it was like payday, it was back to square one for about 16 months, actually, it was 16. And I then was the one who gave the ultimatum, because I always thought, you know, things are going to get better, things will get better, and then it was just, I was fed up, it was predictable. I put in my diary when his paydays were, just so I could predict when he would have a little lapse. And without fail, like sometimes it's like, oh, it's his payday tomorrow, I probably won't see him for 3 days because he could just vanish on one big binge as soon as it's payday. And then I gave the ultimatum and said, look, you can't live with me anymore because I'm trying to get on with my life. I'm not getting any sleep. I worry about you for days on end when you've disappeared, and then all of a sudden you'll need a picking up from somewhere halfway across the country and you don't even know how you got there.
Fortunately, he chose you rather than the drink.
Not initially.
No.
No, well, I didn't give him much choice. I booted him out. I said, look, you can't live with me anymore. Like, you've got to go elsewhere. And I felt terrible because it meant he ends up going to the homeless hostel. And I was thinking, oh, God, this is going to go one or two ways. Either he's going to have some sort of epiphany, or he's going to start taking crack and heroin as well. Because, you know, I've seen that. I used to live near the homeless hostel, and I know, you know, the clients that go there. And at first he started drinking with them at 10 in the morning, but after a couple of weeks, when they were saying, oh, do you want to come out? We're going to get some heroin. He was like, I don't want to go the same way as everybody else there, because they ended up on the streets again.
Yeah.
And he's now not drunk for about 18 months.
Amazing.
So, and he got moved on to accommodation because he has mental health needs, and he's got a nicer flat than me, but it's owned by Mind, and he gets like support, and now he's about to move out of there and get back into work. And
amazing.
he's just a completely different person. I mean, as a drunk person, he was the loudest, most extroverted and irritating person in the room. He would be absolutely outrageous, and he's actually just a quiet introvert. Mm.
It is interesting, actually, that well, I mean, number one, we don't make enough of a connection between mental health issues and alcohol. I mean, it's just not spoken about, is it, really? Nowhere near enough. I mean, I'm not trying to say that absolutely all mental health issues are caused by alcohol. That would be ridiculous. But alcohol exacerbates everything that's going on. So the link is absolutely massive, and it's just not looked at enough. And so many people, when they do stop drinking, find that they are, as you say, they're actually quite introvert.
Mm.
It is really fascinating how they recognise they're a different person.
It's a cycle that sort of fuels itself, I think. So if you've got poor mental health, you might look to alcohol for relief. It's perfectly legal, and it's a very effective and powerful drug that just happens to be legal for historic and cultural reasons, not because it's safe, but because we've done it for so long. And any political party that suggested, you know what, I think I'm going to get rid of alcohol, well, they're not going to win an election,
no,
are they? So it's only by accident of history that alcohol is legal and not a Class A drug, really.
Exactly.
And in other countries, it might be actually, they don't drink alcohol, but weed.
Yeah.
They might, and we might look down and frown upon it, but it's the same thing. It's all the same thing. It's a drug that you're using to change the way you feel.
Yeah.
And although lots of people drink and not affect their mental health, I've never found someone who drinks to excess and thought, you know what, they're a terrible drunk, but excellent mental health.
Yeah.
You know? It just doesn't happen, does it?
No, it really doesn't. So how did you get out of the trap? When did you get the kind of wake-up call and decide it was time to change?
I had a series of like rock bottoms that got a little bit lower each time. And then it was just before lockdown, in 2020, that I'd been in the psychiatric unit. I hadn't been sectioned at that time, but I thought, you know what, I really need to stop doing this. Because what would happen is I'd come back really drunk, and then I'd have this massive depressive episode, either that night, it was the morning, before I went to bed, or after I woke up, and then I'd start like overdosing on whatever tablets were around. My partner was a nurse and always stocked up on different things, and I would just like find myself overdosing. I really just wanted to die. And then I had one sort of drinking session that lasted far too long and cost hundreds of pounds. I was just lying on a sofa sweating for 2 days, and I couldn't eat. I couldn't even have the telly on because it was just too much of a disturbance. And I just got up, drank water, urinated, lay on the sofa, sweating for 2 days, and I thought, nah, this is, I think we're done here. And I'd had a friend in a similar situation who'd said to me that they'd been sectioned and had a bad relationship with alcohol, and he said, I just want to die or have a real stab at living. And I thought, oh my God, they're like polar opposites.
Yeah.
And it's that little word,
which one shall I choose?
It's like, actually, maybe before I keep on overdosing, maybe I should have a real stab at living, see how that goes first. If it doesn't work out, I can always go back to the dying room. And I then just stopped. I got some help from a local drug and alcohol centre, which I now work for. And I did a detox, like a home detox, so you have to check in every day and you take medication that helps with the dangerous withdrawal symptoms that you get if you're dependent. And then I decided that I was going to move in with my parents for a bit. This is because the temptation, living at home on my own, lonely, just with the cats, and within a 20-minute walk of three 24-hour off licences, it was just too much, and I knew I'd end up going down to the pub, or I'd take a phone call from someone, and my parents, as I said, don't drink anyway, live out in the sticks, so I thought, I'll probably have more success, if I'm serious about it, if I go and stay with them. And I hadn't stayed with them for more than 2 days since I was a teenager, and all of a sudden, I've gone there, I was thinking maybe a couple of weeks, that should be enough to sort the life out. And then after a few days, we were in lockdown. I was like, oh, do you mind if I stay here a little bit longer? Because apparently lockdown might go on for 3 weeks.
Just flatten the curve, eh?
Exactly.
Don't get me started.
We've been told not to go outside for 3 weeks now. So. And I ended up there for 3 months.
Yeah.
And then moved out and back into my flat and started doing anything to occupy my time. Yeah. Like a lot of people, you just start painting things for no reason. I decorated my flat and it was so bloody boring. It was like, it's nice that it's done, but it's still not as fun as going to the pub. I learned how to tile. tile
always
the kitchen.
Always be working for you. But it, in those sort of early, relatively early days of sobriety, you had this real sense that you really wanted to put together social events, didn't you? Because I know that was a conversation that you and I had, because, you know, you're saying that there's lots of people that they still want to go out and meet people, but where do they go? What do they do? And that was, you had a real heart for trying to bring people together in some kind of social way.
I did. I think I'd had enough of the painting.
Can understand that.
It was when I got in contact with you. It was about I'd been sober for 6 months,
yeah.
And my life felt very empty. Part of that was because I wasn't drinking. The other part was we were in lockdown, so it was hard for me to tell what part of this massive emptiness I feel is because there's not alcohol, and what part is because we're all told to lock ourselves inside. But I really missed human connection. And so I thought, okay, well, I'd love to go out and meet people again, but I scoured my local town in Southend-on-Sea to see what there was to do that wasn't centred around alcohol. I didn't even want to be the same room as it yet. And it's like, okay, there's the cinema. And that was it. It's like, well, that's not really socialising, isn't it? sitting in a room silently next to someone. So I thought, well, if there's nothing, maybe I can put on a little event myself. I found a little it was a disused unit that was like a pop-up that you could rent out. And I posted into a local Facebook group, see if anybody else would be interested in coming to an event that was alcohol-free. And like, lots of people got in contact. I was like, okay. And they would help me do it. And they started giving me money for... I've got 600 people in a Facebook group within 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, I better put on an event now. Someone's given me a fridge. Someone's given me £100 towards stock. I've got some free drinks here. And then I did put on my first event. It was only a tiny place, and it's like limit of 40 people. And I sold all 40 tickets. I was like, bloody hell, especially for a town, well, city now, the size of Southend. I thought that was pretty good going. And so I put on about another 20 events, I think, before. It's like, I then, you know, I was unsuspended from work, and it became a bit difficult to keep on carting so much stock to and from. It was like it took up the entire weekend, and then trying to sell tickets all the time. But and the unit, the pop-up, ended up going. But I made some real friends there, and actually, it seemed like such a small thing. But that first event, I mean, I'd never been very good at making friends. I remember a school report even said, in year six, my final year of a primary school, it says, Michael finds it hard to make and keep friends. And I've always remembered that, because in adulthood I was thinking, oh God, it hasn't really changed, has it? Unless I get annihilated, that's how you make friends. You get drunk and talk to somebody else who's as drunk as you. And all of a sudden I felt the same. I was like, I don't really know how to make friends. And so I put on this event, and I'd never had a birthday party because of the fear of, like, people won't turn up. And so I put on this event and was thinking, well, people won't turn up. And it was full. And I was just in the back in this kitchen, which smelled of curdled milk. It wasn't a fancy place. Scrubbing up these glasses that I'd... And I just had a little cry whilst I was cleaning the glasses. Like, people came to my party. And they're having a good time, and there's no booze here. It can be done.
It is amazing, isn't it? It's just that power of connection, because completely disparate people with nothing really much in common, other than they've made this decision to choose not to drink. But that's huge. That little piece of connection is amazing.
Yeah, I think I knew about five people who came to my little party, and the rest I didn't know. And I'm still in contact with a lot of them, and formed friendships and... So put on quite a few events since then. I've had to wrap it up because it was becoming a bit too much work, because at the time I'd been suspended from work and lost my driving licence. But then, you know, I found employment and I just couldn't commit myself to it anymore. But then I found, like, there's loads of other people after lockdown putting on alcohol-free events more and more. So I thought, well, I built a website so I could sell tickets for these events. One, I just repurpose it, and I can help publicise any other alcohol-free events and get groups to attend others, and it's lovely because I don't have to pour drinks and cart things around and wash the glasses, and I can just sit there and be a participant now, but also get a group of friends who I've met through, mainly online, through the sort of sober community. Mm. Like later, well, in May, we're going to go to the Alcohol Free Comedy Club in Bethnal Green. I like to go to each of their events. It's brilliant.
Mm. All professional. That sounds great. I want to do that.
I just get a table every time now, because having known nobody who doesn't drink, I now know lots of people.
Exactly.
And it's like, I'll just get a table and we'll fill it up.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about those early weeks and months then. How did your friendships change? I mean, I know you're not very good at making friends, but the ones you did have, did they fall away? Did you, you know, what was it like?
I had got to the point where I had driven most of my friends away.
Right.
The only people who would tolerate me when I was drunk were people who were as drunk as I was.
Yeah.
Anybody else would just walk away and think, oh, bloody hell, look at that mess.
Yeah.
And so the friendships I had were based on us being forgiving of each other's behaviour.
Right.
It's like, oh, I need someone who's very forgiving because I need to be forgiven a lot. I need to be forgiven every time I've drunk.
Yeah.
And so I would forgive anybody else's awful behaviour. Because that meant that they would forgive me.
Mm.
And so my friendships weren't particularly good. I mean, the person I spent the most time with would get drunk and beat me up, or I'd be in hospital. And then I'd forgive him because, like, he's forgiven me for whatever I said to him that led him to decide he was going to smash my head against the wall. But, you know, I've had stitches and passed out and things, and I'd still just go out with him. Because that's what friendship had become. It had become someone to drink with who could be forgiving of my behaviour. So I decided, actually, I needed better than that. And I let those sorts of friendships go.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, oh, well, we all do silly things when we're drunk. I now look back and think, why were you letting someone beat you up and then just going out with them again?
So that leads us on to a really interesting question then. So at what point did you... Did things start to lift for you in the sense that, because you know you have like potentially a fairly long period where, well, I mean, certainly for me, I had no idea where I was for the first, I felt kind of quite raw really for a while. But at what point did you start to get a sense of, oh, do you know what? That's the kind of person I am really.
Mm.
How long did it take for you to kind of uncover the real fabulous you that was inside, that had just been, had a lot of crap put on it?
You know, I think I'm still discovering my own fabulosity.
Are you?
but no, there was, I sort of look at sobriety in like two stages for me. The first part was all about subtraction. It was about what I was removing from my life. I was removing alcohol, obviously. I was removing certain people,
yeah.
certain places, anything I associated with drinking. And then all of a sudden, it's like, how on earth do people fill all this time? It's like, it felt really empty, hence the painting and the tiling, which I got absolutely no joy from. I was bored rigid and felt isolated. And I was doing, because I knew I can't go back. And I started feeling sort of comfortable with it. It felt sort of normal to me after about 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I think that people go to like 12-step meetings, they'll like try and do like 90 meetings in 90 days. Like 90 days is seen by a lot of people as a big milestone. And so it started feeling normal to me after about 3 months. Mm. And then by 6 months, it's like, actually, I'm okay with this now. It's like I'm beginning to enjoy myself. And then I decided, well, I've got to learn how to entertain myself. Mm. We tell children off for not being able to entertain themselves. But the only way I'd learn how to entertain myself is to sit down drinking poison.
Yeah.
It's not the best hobby.
Yeah.
And once I'd stopped drinking the poison, it's like, I'm bored. I'm like a little kid who's bored and doesn't know how to entertain themselves. And I've got no friends. So I thought, I'm just going to start saying yes to everything. If it doesn't involve alcohol, even if I think it's going to be absolutely bloody awful, I'm going to say yes to it. And at one ridiculous point, I agreed to meet someone in Derby for a cup of tea. And I live in Southend. We did a bit of roller skating as well. I hadn't quite realised how far Derby was. Until the day before when I looked up on Google, I thought, it's just the Midlands, you know. So, yeah, it was quite a long way. I think I had a 6-hour round trip for a couple of tea and half an hour of roller skating.
But you're right, you do see
it was
this
worth
to everything,
it.
Including, cold water swimming, you threw
I've said
into,
yes
to all didn't
the,
you?
All the identikit sober stuff, I've tried.
Yeah. And getting your kit off, of course, we have to talk about that.
Yeah, who doesn't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not everyone
who
gets
doesn't get their kit off
for a calendar all the time. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, yeah, the cold water swimming. Everybody's got to try that. So, I've decided I'm not a cold water dipper. I'm a tepid water dipper. I will go in the sea in the warmer months. And then, yeah, I did end up doing a calendar, a naked calendar.
Have you wiped that one out of your memory?
I haven't. I've done two now, haven't I? I met through sober events, like an equally eccentric friend, also called Michael. And we did an Instagram live, and we always went off-piste. He's a very organised person, and he always writes an agenda. And I'm like ADHD overload, and we just throw the agenda in the bin. And then we started talking about how we could raise money for charity. And then I said, how about a calendar girls style calendar, just of sexy sober people. And at this point, it was late October, early November. So yeah, obviously we'd have to have it done by Christmas. So all we need is 10 other sober people who are willing to get naked and photographed. And after with this live, like 10 people sort of messaged us. I was like, oh no. We've now like kind of committed to this, haven't we? So like in super quick, timing, we managed to turn around a calendar to raise money for Alcohol Change UK, and I think the first year we raised £2,000 from it. And it was like, oh, that was good fun. It was very stressful. I had to learn page layout, for example, and quite a lot of photo manipulation. So that was a bit of a crash course. But yeah, and then after that, Alcohol Change had invited me and my friend Michael to become what they call ambassadors. Unfortunately, it's not a paid thing. There is no fancy embassy that we get to go to. But we've been doing little bits of fundraising ever since. And then there was demand for a second calendar. And they raised £3,000. But you know what? It's such a hard sell. I don't know why people don't want pictures of me naked on their walls. It's quite insulting, really.
I seem to remember it was quite subtle. You had wings strategically.
The first one,
placed.
Yeah. Well, I was February in the first calendar,
right.
So I decided to be Cupid, you know, to mark Valentine's Day, and I had a rose in my mouth. This year, we'd drawn December, so I was a naked Santa. My friend Michael was an elf. We got naked in the woods. It was quite scary because I was expecting a dog walker to come past at any point. So we went deep, deep into the scrub. My partner was the cameraman. I had a stocking strategically placed over the naughty bits. Although it wouldn't stay on. So I needed a fluffer. And then it stayed for the all-important shoot. And also, I know that sober legend that is Andy Ramage, that's where he does his morning walks.
I thought you were going to say he got his kit off as
no,
well.
No, I was thinking, what if Andy Ramage sort of walks? But no, it was actually a brilliant day because I felt like we were being really naughty. Mm. You know, I used to enjoy doing naughty, outrageous, potentially illegal things when I was drinking. It was half the fun of it. It's even more fun if you do it sober. That's proper badass. Anybody can break the law and be naughty drunk. I mean, that's what the drink's for. But if you can do it sober...
Exactly.
One adrenaline rush. Yeah, and then we had a nice pub lunch afterwards.
Exactly. So then, and then more recently, still with raising money for Alcohol Change, you tell us about the running. Because you're not a natural runner, are you? We had this conversation.
No.
Neither am I. And I did Couch to 5K because a bunch of people challenged me to do it, right? Because I was doing a little retreat thing, and I was doing this whole thing about how we all have limiting beliefs and how we tell ourselves stuff, and actually all we need to do is reframe the limiting beliefs, and this was my whole shtick. And then, of course, we were having a conversation separately, and I said, oh, I can't run. So they all went,
oh, so that's just a limiting belief.
Completely got me. So I had to do the bloody thing. I hated every minute of it. I cannot. I know some people here are runners, and that's just lovely. Mm. I hated it. Hated it. First trip out the door, came back. I tripped over. I was on the canal path. Tripped over. Came back bruised and bleeding. And the kids are like, "Oh, that went really well." But I did it. I did stick at it. I mean, I was absolutely shite. I was just like kind of hobbling, but I did it. And then, towards the end, as I kind of completed, no joy whatsoever, because then I realised I'd hurt my knee.
Yes.
Like, what the hell is that even about? So I'm very impressed that not only have you stuck at it, but you're raising money or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it if I wasn't raising money. but... I you might be surprised by looking at me, but I am not a natural born athlete. And since I stopped drinking and started binge eating instead, I have managed to put on 4.5 stone. So I got so fed up with how fat and unenergetic I was. And I thought, I've got to do something, all right? I've been putting it off for ages. It's like, yeah, I can get... I'm sober now, so I can do whatever I like. And then it's like, I felt just really not liking the look of myself in the mirror. And I've only got horrible crap clothes because they're only meant to be for a few weeks until I get thin again. And now that's been over 3 years that I've been wearing the temporary clothes from Oxfam. It's only until I fit back into my nice clothes. There's no point spending money. And then I decided, yeah... It's now time, and I don't want to just lose weight with a crash diet just to put it on again. I actually want to have some energy, and I want to be able to, you know, just not feel knackered from walking up the stairs. I remember I'd walked up the stairs to my flat, and I was like out of breath, and then I found out I was getting out of breath by putting the laundry in the washing machine, and I thought, I'm 42. Not like 72. I shouldn't get out of breath putting the laundry in the washing machine. And so I committed to actually working out a bit. And I attempted to go for a run, and I was able to run for 30 seconds. Thank you.
Start.
And
that's
then I had to stop to catch my breath. And then I've been doing Couch to 5K. And then I start, in my second week, you have to run like, I think it's 90 seconds at one point. And then you walk. And I managed to hurt my knee in the 90 seconds. I mean, I have got, I've got a metallic ankle. I've got loads of metal in my left ankle from what I used to call a sporting injury because it happened, on a skiing holiday,
right,
in which I did no skiing. But I didn't tell the people at work that. I got really drunk at the pub on my birthday and then I fell down a mountain. And broke my leg in, I broke my ankle in three places and dislocated it so it was pointing 90 degrees in the wrong direction. And I've got lots of metal there. It took me a year to learn to walk properly again.
Oh, wow. And so that's really impressive if you're running.
Well, yeah, I still walk with a bit of a limp and that's why my knee goes. It's like one of the reasons why I've never really stuck at it because I have, when I was lighter, I did do a 5K, but I stopped in the Oxfam on the way home to pick up a stick because I couldn't walk. Because every time I ran, I'd then just put me out of action for 2 days. So this time, I've just been doing it gently, gently building up. And the last two little runs I've been on, I haven't needed to ice my leg and get the ibuprofen. And I've been working on like trying to get some movement back in my ankle. And it feels like a success for me. It's really unimpressive. Like, my best friend just did the half marathon at the weekend. I was clapping him. I'm working up for a 5K, and I, after seeing him at the marathon, I felt really smug because I ran for a whole 5 minutes without stopping. It's like, ooh, in 6 weeks, I've gone from 30 seconds to 5 minutes, and I did a whole kilometre. But I think that's one of the important things I'm learning, is that you don't measure yourself by other people's standards.
Harrison is the thief of joy.
Yeah, he's 10 years younger. He hasn't buggered up his leg. He's been running for like a year and a half now. For me, running for 5 minutes is a big deal because I couldn't do 30 seconds before and I was getting puffed out putting the laundry in the washing machine. And part of the reason is I'm trying to lose weight and I've lost one stone. I've still got 3.5 to go, but it feels like a success. And although I can't say I enjoy running, I enjoy having run.
Yes.
And
yes.
I can't get the enjoyment of having run without actually doing the
yes.
run. I'm beginning to accept that. You know. It's a hard truth. But it's just, I've also learned that since ditching the booze, if you want to have fun, you actually have to put some effort in. And that was a new concept as well, because drinking was lazy fun. You can do it sitting down and just trick your brain into releasing chemicals that make you feel like you're having fun, while actually what you're doing is bloody boring. All you have to do is be sober and watch someone who's drunk and think, what are they doing? Is that actually fun, what they are doing? No, it's not. So, yeah, having fun and getting a buzz actually takes effort. And that sucks. Yeah. But it's always worth it.
So you have your actual 5K coming up.
Oh, it's in May, yeah.
Okay, so just give a plug for the alcohol change thing that you're doing. What can people do?
Well, Alcohol Change has a campaign called Sober Spring, which is, it challenges people to not drink for 3 months, between the months of March and May. That is 3 months, yeah. So it's like a longer version of their dry January. Sometimes people do dry January, they might drink a bit during the February and then think, actually, I want to give it another go, but maybe for even longer. And so Sober Spring is your perfect opportunity. And one of the things they encourage you to do is, if you want to do a fundraising, is do a 5 or 10K at some point during those 3 months. So I thought, yep, well, this will be another thing to aim for, something to look forward to. So I'm going to be at the end of May with, it was just going to be me just doing a 5K in Epping Forest. And then my friend who's just on the half marathon said, oh yeah, I'll come along with you. And then I've had another three people say, can I come? I was like, okay, we're all going to do a 5K in breakfast. And just at the same time, raise a bit of money for
it. So how can people sponsor you or whatever they have to do?
I have a Just Giving page, which is linked on my Instagram account.
We'll
my Instagram's,
in
yeah, I'm happy without the hooch. Well, you can just type in my name, Michael Sargard, Just Giving, and the page will come up on Google. And yeah, I just set myself a modest, like, I thought, I'll set myself a target of £500, and I think I'm about £463 now. So if I can get £100 per kilometre, that would be brilliant, especially because my best friend Michael, who's just done the half marathon, is now doing the marathon and the 5K. So he's doing 39 miles,
wow,
and he's raised £1,100, which is very good, but it's not £100 per kilometre, is it? I'm bigging it up, and I'm not calling it a 5K, because that makes it sound like it's not very impressive. I'm calling it my 5 million millimetre challenge. So, yeah, I am doing my 5 million millimetres challenge, and if you want to sponsor me, the money goes to Alcohol Change. We're on a mission to eradicate alcohol harm in the UK. They're the people behind Dry January. Then please feel free to sponsor me.
Great. Well, we'll definitely put that link in the notes. So, Michael, just give us a little bit of an insight then into some of the fabulous ways that your life has changed. I don't know, some of the highs since you've ditched the booze. I mean, we were talking earlier, I was talking to somebody earlier, and we were saying, sober hair, who knew?
Is sober hair a thing?
Yeah. Oh, you've not got that one yet. Oh, sorry.
What was it meant to come on my chest or something? Tell me about the sober hair. Does it get shinier? It's got greyer, yeah. But I am getting older.
It's different things for different people. That's why I'm asking what it is for you.
Well, so I'm not sure I've got the sober hair. I mean, I'm lucky I've got hair, really. My brother lost his at 17 and is always trying to convince me I'm going bald.
You're so doing all right, then.
I'm growing it as long as possible, just to rub it in his face.
But what have been the joys?
The joys. There have been some real ups and downs, but I just enjoy people's company now. I used to meet people to drink, and now I meet them to see them. And I can have as much of a scream at a breakfast with coffee than I ever did in the pub. And I can be very puerile and crude, and I enjoy that. And when you go to the pub, often crude, puerile stories come out, and that's one of the things I loved. And now I just do them in the morning.
Anyway, yes.
And I find, like, other people who've stopped drinking, they also have this naughty streak. And I met up with a group of fellow non-drinkers in Southend at this rather nice cafe.
Which one?
It's the Beach Hut. It's the seafront. You've got a lovely sea view. The food's good. But we got a little bit outrageous. The conversation was filthy, and we managed to clear the cafe. And I felt a bit guilty, but at the same time, I thought, yes, get in there. And I got, for the first time in my life, I got chucked out of Wetherspoon sober. And that was because I'd smuggled in some alcohol-free spirit. And I bought my Coke and then put in my alcohol-free spiced rum. And they didn't want me, like, oh, no, you can't bring your own drinks here. And I got oiked out of Wetherspoon. I've done some truly atrocious things in Wetherspoons before. I've never been oiked out. And I felt so proud.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I was like, I am a badass. I get chucked out of Wetherspoons sober.
You see, you're still rock and roll.
Yeah, I've tried the cold water thing. It's all right. I've done a lot of sober raving. I like to hang out in the smoking area. I've never liked dancing even when I was drunk. But I do like meeting people. I like the people who go to the raves. So I turn up and I've like pushed myself to do a bit of podium dancing, as you do. So I've danced on the podium and swung my shirt around.
When you were doing Nuggets, was that when you were doing the naked photo shoot? Or
no, but I feel like that was before and after I regularly. But, you know, I'd have my 5 minutes and then I'm happy just to chat to people in the smoking area, to be honest. I've recently done sober karaoke, though, and that is much more my thing. Okay. Bloody loved it.
Okay, you any good?
I did my Bjork number.
Did you? I can imagine that. I take it you're talking about it's so quiet.
I did, it's so quiet. Brought the house down. We went to this, it was in a bar it wasn't an alcohol-free bar, it was just a standard bar. It was the Thursday before Good Friday, so it was like a weekend. And turned up and it was really quite boring, you know, to begin with. And then all the sober people arrived, and we brought the party. It was dull until the sober people turn up. And luckily there was some bad singing, because there's nothing worse than when the karaoke starts and somebody sings well. I mean, how boring. And nobody else then wants to go out, but there was some terrible singing. And so I did my little Chaz and Dave style Bjork number. Who would have thought those two genres merged so well? And yeah, I'm up for it. And now this person's decided they're going to do regular sober karaoke in London. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to sign myself up for that. Yeah. I think the strangest thing I did sober, again, it was with my best friend Michael when we did a live. We should stop doing lives on Instagram because these weird things happen. First time we had to do a naked calendar. And then somehow during our live, again, this was not on the agenda. We talked about colonic irrigation. And someone said, who was watching, said, oh, well, I had a colonic when I first went sober. And then she contacted them and we were offered a free colonic. And we thought, well, that's the sort of thing friends do together, isn't it? So we both took a day off of work and were ferried up to Norfolk. And of course, I had to film him. We weren't allowed to film as the pipe went in. But we did that as a sponsor. We had a sponsored colonic. And you know what?
People pay good money for that, do they?
No, they didn't actually. That was our least successful fundraiser, strangely enough. I think we got 100 quid though.
Why should we pay for the health of your microbiome?
But again, an unexpectedly brilliant day. Yeah. So it was bizarre. And it was, I enjoyed watching him grimace. As gallons of water were pumped into him, and you got to see all the stuff going through the tube. There were worms, there was grit. And yeah, another unexpectedly fun day. We had a nice lunch afterwards.
So given that you have this thing then of saying yes to everything, I wonder what will be next.
I dread to think, but I'm excited. I'm up for anything.
Yeah.
Well, nearly.
So is that your top tip, do you think? Is that one of your top tips for people who've ditched the booze? We've already said, you know, a lot of stuff has to come out of your life, but it's all about what you add in.
Exactly.
So I would say, you know, on a serious note, you've really got to add in good food and good nutrition and good mindset. But, you know, I'm guessing you would say, in addition to those basics, say yes to absolutely everything.
Exactly. You don't. I didn't really know what I liked other than alcohol, and I had lots of preconceived ideas of things that I wouldn't enjoy, but actually found I did enjoy. I mean, there's quite a lot of hippie stuff that goes on. Like, well, that's a bit too woo for my, you know, it's harmless, but I quite enjoy it. I enjoy a gong bath. Who
good,
knew that?
Good.
Yeah, I like a gong bath now. I would have avoided that.
Have you done a cacao ceremony yet?
I have not done the cacao ceremony. I was saying only the other day, how have I been sober this long and not done a cacao ceremony? It's almost criminal.
Had shamanic healing?
No, I have not. I've got some
suggestions for it, haven't I?
Yeah, these should be, because I created my own bingo card. what I called Sober Bingo, and I shared it with my friends, and we were trying to cross off each of them, like, well, obviously you've got to do, you know, you've got to do the fart in a yoga class, you've got to, that's something that happens to anyone who does yoga, you pass wind, don't you? And so you haven't properly done yoga until you pass wind accidentally in the class. You've got to start a blog. I mean, everybody goes sober at some point, either does a blog or you've got to become a coach, haven't you?
Yeah.
You do have to become a coach.
Definitely, come to me.
Again, I mean, I did some stand-up comedy as one of my challenges. Somebody,
yeah, that's very impressive.
And yeah, well, that was because I found I was so nervous when I first stopped drinking. I didn't realise what an anxious person I was until I started going out in public without alcohol. I was like, oh my God, I've got two options now. I can either hide away for the rest of my life, which does seem quite appealing, or I can try and like do something to beat the nerves. And I knew that locally to me, there was a comedy school, say it's 70 quid for a 10-week course, which is a bargain. And I'd known friends who'd done it, and I'd always thought, there's no way on God's green earth you would find me going on a stage in front of people who have paid and trying to be funny, because that would just be the most awful thing imaginable. And I thought, that is terrifying. Let's do it. So I deliberately did it because I thought it was terrifying. And you don't have to do the performance at the end if you don't want. So I thought, I can always back out. But I did it. And I decided I was going to do the performance. And what I thought was really telling was there's some other people who were performing that night who it was also their first time. And before it started, they were looking really sweaty and downing pints to give them Dutch courage. And for the first time in my life, I thought, you know what, I'm okay with this. I had to do my driving test four times because I was so nervous that I couldn't keep my legs still on the pedals. And I've had to do public speech stuff for work, and I'd be shaking paper the whole way through. It's just embarrassing. And then after this 10-week course, I just changed the expectations of myself. It's like, I don't have to be funny. All I have to do is survive. If I got there and I don't actually die, then that's a success.
Yeah. Yeah.
So by the time I got there, I thought, the other thing was, I thought, I'm worried about making a fool of myself, whereas I used to make a fool of myself constantly drunk.
It would cost you money.
It would cost me money, my relationship, my job. I'm worried about not being very funny. So I think I can deal with that. Like, no humiliation is going to be as bad as what I've already done. So as long as I don't die, it's going to be okay. And since then, I don't suffer from nerves and stage fright in the same way. It helped me to conquer that fear and that anxiety. In a way, I expect less of myself. I always used to have this expectation that if I did something, I had to be very good at it or the best at it, even if it was my first time. And it's just, that prevented me, that attitude prevented me from even trying things, because if I didn't think I could be excellent at it, I wouldn't try it, because then I'd be seen to have failed in some way. But now, I don't mind failing. I enjoy failing. If I don't complete this 5K, I gave it a try and probably had a laugh. So exactly. I'm going to give it a go. And everybody fails at stuff, and nobody is good at things the first time they try it. Well, sometimes they are, but they're horrible people. So I just enjoy failing at stuff now. And you know what? It's okay to be rubbish at your hobbies.
Yeah.
Because if people aren't paying you for it, and you're rubbish at it, but you enjoy it,
who cares?
Just do it. Well, my stepmom, she loves singing. She joined a choir. She's pretty much ruined the choir. But she loves singing. She enjoys it. Terrible at it. Keeps on going back. Keeps her happy.
Michael, thank you so much. It's fantastic to chat to you. And we love your enthusiasm and your honesty. And thank you for sharing, you know, some of the stuff that's quite serious. And, you know, it's not all been kind of bunnies and rainbows, has it? But I think you've kind of given us an indication of what freedom is like. Because I think that's kind of what sums it up is that when you've got that freedom from the alcohol trap, everything changes.
Yeah, so I see it as a form of emancipation. I was trapped in a cycle for so long, and I didn't think it was possible for me to get out of it. And also, like, my ancestry, the whole Scottish side of my family, which was my mum's side, just alcoholism just runs through that entire line of the family. And I even remember when my nan passed away when I was a kid, going and clearing up all the empty bottles from around her flat after she passed away, and her last words were whiskey, 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 because she was wanting us to smuggle whiskey into the hospital. And so from a young age, I told myself, you know, well, it's in the blood. If you cut me open, whiskey will run out. It was just, it seemed like it was inevitable for me, and so I treated it as something, it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then, as well as enjoying failing and stuff, one of the things I really enjoy doing now is actually proving myself wrong, because I still have beliefs about things I can and can't do. And then I felt like I was unable to stop believing. I couldn't believe that I would be able to give up booze. So instead of trying to change that belief, I thought, well, how about I just suspend the belief and do a little experiment and see if that belief is right? So I thought, okay, I don't think I can do it. I'm going to give it a try and see what happens. So I suspended the belief, and now, you know what, I think I can stay sober.
Absolutely. Of course you can.
And I love being wrong. See, I didn't think I'd ever be able to run, because, you know, I've got my dodgy leg. Well, I've done 5 minutes of running, and I've got another 5 weeks.
Exactly.
I can get up to
5K. We're
all
going to be rooting for you, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yep. Brilliant. Yes.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it. It's so lovely to hear your story, and it's very inspirational, so we really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Anyone got any questions they want to throw at Michael or me before we finish? No?
Ooh.
Yes. Sober
karaoke. You've got more going now.
I don't know yet because it hasn't. It's so new that I've been told it's going to happen. There's an Instagram page that's been created that says coming soon, and as soon as the venue's confirmed, then I'm just going to be. I'm going to try and spread the word because who doesn't love a bit of karaoke?
Yeah.
And the worse the better. You're still allowed to. You're allowed to sing badly even when you're sober. You don't have to be good at it.
Anyone else?
What about the raving? Where have you
been at? Oh, well, there's a couple of I've been
House
to. There's
of Happiness.
House of Happiness is the one I've been to most of all, which is in Vauxhall.
Yeah.
I think the next one is coming up, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I can't go to that one, but I've been to most of theirs. There's also one in Brighton, Sassy, and that's Sober Bright Huns, mm-hmm. I think they call it. Mm-hmm. They're... The Sober Girl Society have ones, but
I think there's some
I can't
in Manchester
go to
as well,
it.
Isn't there?
There's
yeah.
Dry Wave in Manchester.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're really big. They have about 400 people at each of those.
Yeah.
In Manchester, haven't made up to one of those yet, but I intend to. But yeah, Sober Girl Society. But there is no, that's not a rave. Ignore that. I was going to say there's one coming up in London for Alcohol Change. That's more of a social and a mixer,
mm-hmm.
but co-hosted by Sober Girl Society. But the first one where boys can go along. Because I really wanted to go to a Sober Girl Society event. And I knew there was going to be a mascot at one of them. And I thought, maybe if I can be the person inside the mascot, I'd be able to, like, spy, see what goes on at the Sober Girl Society. Because there's no Sober Boy Society. Maybe
you could start one.
Don't, because then I'm not taking on too much. I have been thinking about it. It's like, because I keep on saying yes to everything.
Yeah.
I then take on too much and then have some sort of mental breakdown.
Yeah.
And having, like, when I first went sober, I was like, how do you fill all these hours?
Mm-hmm.
It's
now
like,
you
it's,
don't
it's
have
got
enough.
To the point, oh, yeah, I've started thinking, oh, look, I'm going to have to go part-time so I can fit my hobbies in. But I'm not really paying my way full-time, so that's not quite an option at the moment. But I would love to. I think we should get a subsidy from the government for being sober.
Yes, definitely.
They should, because we're not a blight on the health service anymore.
Exactly
so should,
that. You're not rocking up to A&E the whole time like
yeah,
you were
they
before.
Yeah, they should just pay us not to drink. Cause it's very...
I like that idea.
It's a lot of work not drinking. You've got to do the running.
I like
you've got
that
to do
idea.
The cold water swimming. You've got to
exactly.
do the journaling. Then
the
you've got the meditation.
Yeah.
It's full-time. All the things you've got to do
colonics.
To be sober. So we should effectively be made civil servants.
I agree.
And put on a civil service pension.
That's a very good idea. Let's
I'm
going to
write to my MP.
Michael, thank you.
Amazing.
Oh, I completely forgot. I've got a little gift for you. This is... let me just check. Yes, it is. It's it's, don't worry, it's not cannabis.
Oh.
It's a CBD muscle rub.
Ooh.
Yeah. I thought that might be quite nice.
Thank
you
very
know.
Much.
I don't know about the metal leg bit, but be all right for the
so
knee.
Rub it on the muscles.
Yeah.
Know. I don't drink it.
And then for when you've done that, that's a magnesium spray to help you sleep.
Oh, brilliant, because my sleep is terrible still. Thank you. Oh, BFT.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you being here tonight. It's so lovely to just meet you, to meet some podcast listeners, to meet some Sober Club members, just for you to meet each other. So if you have come on your own, please, 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 everyone, who's happy to be gone up to, as it were? Okay, there you go then. So nobody needs to feel they're on their own. Thank you again.
Well, thank you. You might not realise, but you're the one responsible for getting me into all this nonsense. You do realise.
What, just because I taught you what a podcast was?
Yeah, you taught me what a podcast was. You made me do it. Then you said I should put my face on the camera.
I did,
someone,
yeah.
Because I didn't ever do that.
Yeah.
So I started doing it. And then you started attending my events, which was very nice. To be honest, I had no idea who you were until the fourth time. Because we had a little garden party at the mayor's house.
Oh, yeah, that was
and you
nice.
Popped along to that. And the mayor was there and said, Michael, is that Janie Lee Grace from Radio 2? And I said, Well, her name's Janie, but I don't think she's got anything to do with the radio. I mean, I did a little bit of Googling. And yes, clearly. And I think that was about the fourth time we'd met. But then again, you know, I didn't know how to get a podcast. And I'd only just worked out how to use the wireless. So thank you for getting me involved.
And look how far you've come. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.